Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the first Three Martini Lunch of 2018. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Brand new year, brand new sponsor. Brought to you today by Quip, the new electric toothbrush. And we'll tell you a whole lot more about that just a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's just get this out of the way at the beginning. We had a little kind of a bet early on in the NFL season about whether the Jets or the Bears would do better, perhaps, or which one would get the higher draft pick. Turns out you win. Both teams finished 5-11. However, due to some sort of tie-breaking system, the Jets will pick 6th in the draft and the Bears will pick 8th. So congratulations on a successful season.
Thank you, sort of, Greg. I point out that it took a lot of effort. Your Bears played hard in not playing hard, but they managed to, you know, my team managed to pull it off. You are correct that it is a very complicated system when two teams have the same record. I believe it is the total record of the teams they play. If the teams you lost to are worse than the team the other team lost to, you get the lower draft choice. So we lost to teams we shouldn't lose to. That's our claim to fame. That is what's worked out well. I believe if those happen to have the same record, then they go to record against common opponents, points scored, points allowed, and then eventually they turn to the what I call the Virginia election resolving system, which is a coin flip. But it didn't have to go that far. So yes, all the excitement of picking 6th in the draft for the third time in 4 years. Yeah.
Oh, great. All right, let's go to our real good martini now, and this is also the lead item in the first morning jolt of 2018. Jim says, go, protesters, go. And then he quotes reports that say, the most significant protests in 8 years are rocking Iran, with state media reporting Tuesday that the death toll from clashes between demonstrators and security forces had reached at least 20. Offering his first comments during the 6 days of unrest, Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei on Tuesday accused, quote, the enemies of Iran of meddling in the country's affairs. Hundreds of people have been arrested, and activists are taking the rare step of publicly criticizing the country's religious leaders. They're the largest protests since the country's disputed 2009 presidential election, which triggered the so-called Green Movement. And Jim, we'll be talking about this in the Crazy Martini from a different angle as well. So the good news is the Iranian people are fed up with their terrorism-loving repressive regime. And unlike 2009, the U.S. administration of President Trump has the right response. We're not just ignoring it or downplaying or trying to make good with the Iranians in hopes of making some sort of deal, which is clearly what the Obama team was doing 8 years ago. No, President Trump, three tweets here. Iran, the number one state of sponsored terror with numerous violations of human rights occurring on an hourly basis, has now closed down the internet so that peaceful demonstrators cannot communicate. Not good. Iran is failing at every level despite the terrible deal made with them by the Obama administration. The great Iranian people have been repressed for many years. They are hungry for food and for freedom. Along with human rights, the wealth of Iran is being looted. Time for a change. The people of Iran are finally acting against the brutal and corrupt Iranian regime. All the money that President Obama so foolishly gave them went into terrorism and into their pockets. The people have little food, big inflation, and no human rights. The U.S. is watching. Jim, you can say whatever you want about President Trump on Twitter, and over the holidays, we certainly saw good and bad Trump. This is great Trump.
Yeah, it's one of those rare moments where if you had any other Republican president, you probably wouldn't be seeing any significant difference in terms of the messaging. He is spot on and hitting just the right note, not excessively, not being over the top. It's worth noting we've seen this sort of thing in Iran before. We've seen, a protest back in 2009, and that'll kind of discuss that a little bit more in our Crazy Martini. But anytime the Iranian regime is having a bad day, we are having a good day. And this is not something that is short-lived. This is now going on for a week. It is, if it seems to the extent we can get good information out of the country, and because of the government's repression, its imprisonment of foreign reporters, and overall general secretiveness and being a closed system, It's very hard to get good information out of her, but it seems like it is gathering speed and momentum, not dying down after a couple of days. And look, everyone who's out there marching and the woman who took off her hijab, they're risking their lives, right? We've seen the Iranian regime shoot people in the streets for daring to protest. So this is really good news. So far, it seems the administration is handling it just right. It is not downplaying it, certainly nothing like the Obama administration. It is not sacrificing the Iranian people in the name of a sketchy deal with the regime. It's kind of satisfying to see this. It is a wonderful start to the year. I don't think we should fool ourselves into believing the Iranian regime is going to go quickly or quietly, but the vocal dissatisfaction of the people against the regime demonstrates that, no, it was not a matter of Saudi and Trump being aggressive and assertive. We're drawing the people back towards the regime. The Iranian people are as dissatisfied as ever with the mullahs and their corrupt, autocratic, oppressive way of governing.
The vast majority of their population is pretty young. About two-thirds is under 35 years old. And so these are the people that are just tired of this system that's been around now for almost 40 years, that it's just this brutal theocratic effort from the ayatollahs and the mullahs. And hopefully there's some staying power to this, and hopefully some oxygen coming from the United States and others. There should be more, but hopefully that'll provide some momentum for the protests as well. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And this is courtesy, actually, of the New York Times, which probably didn't take any great pleasure in publishing this story, but it's an eye-opener nonetheless. And this has to do with the activities of David Brock and Lisa Bloom heading into the 2016 election. This is after, I believe, the onslaught of women who claim that President Trump either propositioned them or groped them in a number of ways in the wake of the Access Hollywood tape. Here's the New York Times. A nonprofit group founded by the Democratic activist David Brock, which people familiar with the arrangement say secretly spent $200,000 on an unsuccessful effort to bring forward accusations of sexual misconduct against Mr. Trump before Election Day, is considering creating a fund to encourage victims to bring forward similar claims against Republican politicians. Lisa Bloom seized on the political potency of sexual harassment charges against Mr. Trump not long after he clinched the Republican presidential nomination, and she reached out to a pro-Clinton super PAC, though she declined to identify which one, for money to help her vet a sexual misconduct claim against Mr. Trump. And basically what happened here is Brock was trying to offer up to $200,000 to get women to come forward. Then another high-dollar Democratic donor, Susie Tompkins Buell, offered $500,000 to the last-ditch effort to bring out more accusers just before Election Day. Ultimately, Bloom offered the woman $10,000 to come forward, then $50,000 to come forward. She wanted $2 million. Bloom bumped it up to $750,000. Still, the woman would not come forward. So, Jim, the accusation that this is all a big partisan scheme got fed a lot more oxygen as a result of this, and the biggest loser is going to be women with legitimate accusations down the road.
Absolutely. It's so wrongheaded. It is so self-damaging. It is so self-destructive. You almost wonder if David Brock would be happier in a world where everybody instinctively disbelieved accusations against powerful Republican lawmakers. Because, man, oh, man, look, you know, we know this. We live in a world in which powerful men will abuse women sometimes. And we also know we live in a world where sometimes women will make false accusations. And the rest of us who are the outsiders of this process have to sort out who's telling the truth and who's lying. This is how these things turn into these frustrated he said, she said sort of things. One of the arguments that is made to discredit someone is that they're doing an accuser is to say that they're making the accusations for fame, for riches or something like that. Well, if you literally are gathering large amounts of money to give to someone that is conditional upon them making an accusation against a major public figure, of course people are going to look at it with more skepticism. Of course they're going to think that this is all a giant scam. I can't think of anything that would be more destructive towards this argument about accountability towards powerful men. And in fact, you know, you want to put together three people who conservatives have kind of grown to increasingly distrust. You would think of Gloria Allred, you'd think of Lisa Bloom, and you'd think of David Brock. Now, the only thing that's worth noting as a caveat of this is that the good news is that David Brock is not as influential in Democratic circles as he used to. He was always seen as very much plugged in with the Clintons and someone who the Clintons really saw as their useful henchmen, so to speak, Other Democrats, particularly of the Obama era and more recently, just see him as a bit of a freak show. I think my favorite comparison was when somebody said, oh, my God, I went to meet him and it seemed like the Will Ferrell character from Zoolander, Mugatu, you know, this bizarre white-haired, cat-petting lunatic who's ranting and raving and constantly, you know, plans within plans and all kinds of stuff like that. So the good news is that David Brock is not as influential as he used to. The bad news is even just reports like this will probably make more people say, ah, if they're that accusation, the accuser, ah, they're probably just doing it for money. And maybe in some cases they are. But this probably means that more future accusations will be handled with more skepticism because of David Brock attempting to make these things partisan and using these accusations as a tool to attack people he doesn't like politically, instead of treating them with the even-handedness and you know, focus on the truth that he should.
And I think it goes without saying that Gloria Allred and Lisa Bloom are not only a cancer and a stain on the legal system, but on the political system as well, which is saying quite a bit these days. There's a lot of ugly people involved in politics, but those two seem to be right at the top of the list.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd think in this era it would be hard to be a disgrace to your profession, whether it's politics or legally. But no, congratulations, ladies. You've managed to lower people's already low opinion of politicians and lawyers.
Amazing. It just leaves you with a disgusting taste in your mouth. But the good news is we have an answer for that. So let's be honest. You're supposed to brush your teeth for 2 minutes twice a day. But do you? Whether your answer is yes, no, or maybe, you need Quip, the electric toothbrush that looks like it was designed by Apple and cleans like premium electric brushes, but without the high price. Because Quip is the new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into an ultra-slim design with guiding pulses to simplify better brushing, and all at a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes.
Quip comes with a mount that goes right on your mirror, fitting seamlessly into your daily routine. There's no charger or wires, which means Quip is compact and light to make brushing twice daily easy, whether you're at home or on the road. Quip also offers an optional subscription plan, delivering new brush heads on a dentist-recommended 3-month schedule for just $5, including free shipping worldwide.
Quip is backed by a network of over 10,000 dental professionals, including dentists, hygienists, and dental students.
Now, Greg, I got my Quip toothbrush a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, oh, okay, it's an electric toothbrush. Just how great can it be? Greg, I had no idea. First of all, in addition to just how cool it looks, how easy it is to operate, they come with this little guidebook. And it turns out, Greg, everything we knew about brushing our teeth was wrong. The good folks at Quip give you information. For example, how much toothpaste do you think you're supposed to use? It turns out you only need a pea-sized amount. If you see them on the commercials and always on the display, it always looks like they got this long, they're squeezing the tube out. You don't need that much. I don't know if this is because Quip's toothpaste is so super duper terrific or just because marketing companies like us to use a lot of toothbrush, but there's that. Secondly, they talk about this, you know, mount that can go right on your mirror. It comes in this nice little case and a plastic cover that goes over it. And they make this point, and I had never thought about this, Greg. Do you know why you want a plastic cover over your toothbrush? Because it's in the bathroom. You flush the toilet in the bathroom, right? There are lots of things that happen in the bathroom where you don't want germs going on them. So this is a nice way to keep your toothbrush protected. I looked at this and I was like, oh my God, my toothbrushing experience has been transformed. So I salute you, good people of Quip. This is by far the most state-of-the-art, advanced, cool-looking and cool-feeling toothbrush I've ever had. If it was the 1980s, you would find this toothbrush in the Sharper Image catalog. It is that cool. So I cannot recommend Quip enough.
Right now, go to getquip.com/martini to get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/martini. That's spelled getquip.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to the crazy martini and on to the Iran story again. And it's how the media has handled this, if they've handled it at all. You might have noticed that some cable networks covered it a whole lot more than others. And in the print, some decided not to cover it much at all, while others decidedly took a different line than what seems to be the reality. Lee Smith over at Tablet Magazine wrote an extensive piece on this. I'm going to quote from it just a little bit here. He says, so why aren't the protests in Iran making headlines? The short answer is the American media is incapable of covering the story because its resources and available storylines for Iran reporting and expertise were shaped by two powerful official forces, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Obama White House. Without government minders providing them with storylines and experts, American reporters are simply lost, and it shows. He says others are just simply trigger shy here. The Washington Post had a reporter, Jason Rezaian, who was, you know, held prisoner there for a couple of years, so they don't want to send anyone back to Tehran. Then you've got the New York Times correspondent there, Thomas Erdbrink, whose lead for the protests was, quote, protests over the Iranian government's handling of the economy spread to several cities on Friday, including Tehran, in what appeared to be a sign of unrest. Back to Lee Smith. Appeared? Protests are by definition signs of unrest. The fact that Erdbrink appears to have ripped off the Iran government news agency FAR's official coverage of the protests is depressing enough, but the function that these dispatches serve is even worse. What Iranians are really upset about, the messaging goes, isn't the daily grind of living in a repressive, theocratic police state run by a criminal elite that robs them blind, but a normal human desire for better living standards. And he says, when you look at MSNBC and CNN, they're more committed to the resist movement here in the U.S., and that's why they were spent more time covering a white truck parked at Mar-a-Lago than the Iranian protests over the past several days. And a lot of it, Jim, I think, and Lee Smith doesn't get into this too much, is that the media is invested in Iran being a responsible actor on the world stage since the Obama administration invested so much in them and portraying them that way. And as these protesters take to the streets and we see the brutal crackdown yet again, we mentioned at least 20 dead, we go back to another football coach to explain that we were right about Iran and the Obama folks were wrong.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
By letting them off the hook, they were starving to death because of the crippling sanctions. And that, of course, sanctions relief was a big part of the deal. So way to go, Obama administration. Way to go.
Yeah, it is kind of striking how much the legacy of the last administration shapes the coverage of Iran today. I think there are some folks like Omri Sarin who were among those pointing out the narrative up until very recently was like, oh, it's a shame the Trump administration is throwing away this great deal we had with Iran. The plan was working. The Iranians were compliant. And what's more, this Trump bellicosity coupled with the Saudis was driving the Iranian people even closer to the mullahs and support of the regime. Wrong. Thanks for playing. Pretty interesting, but a theory there. But it turned out to not be the case. Look, I can't begrudge certain Western news agencies for being reluctant to deploy correspondents over there when, you know, at any given moment, the regime can grab your reporter, throw them in jail on nonsense charges, keep them in jail, keep them from their family, keep them from legal representation, and basically use your own reporter as a bargaining chip with the United States. The problem is that when you basically pull your reporters out of concern for their safety is that you then end up eliminating your ability to cover what's going on inside the country. And then two, like, if they do that, stop being nice to the regime. Stop giving them the benefit of the doubt. If you're the Washington Post, I don't want anything nice or look at how reasonable the Iranian regime is appearing in the pages of my newspaper. You jail my reporters, I am going to treat you like dirt in print every single day because you've already done something wrong. If you want me to write a nice story about what's going on in Iran, you need to let my reporters in there so that they can cover things the way they like it. Because whether you like it or not, we have a First Amendment in this country, and we do not allow you to just throw people in jail. If you're going to jail foreign correspondents, you need to pay a price in the coverage. And one of the things that's been deeply frustrating about this is how much the jailing of foreign reporters didn't change coverage of the regime. You don't see Fareed Zakaria writing the "Everything You Know About Iran Is Wrong" piece like he did in 2009 before the last crackdown on protesters. But generally, you know, the attitude is that the Iranians are reasonable, and if we just make enough concessions, they'll come someday see reason, and we'll just totally ignore everything else this regime has done. So deeply frustrating, and deep down, I just kind of, you know, would like to see a more universally hostile treatment of this regime, because Lord knows they have earned it year after year.
Absolutely. For the past nearly 40 years now. Jim, good to be back with you, despite that dour note about the media's performance on this story. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Glad to reconnect with you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And don't forget to visit our friends at getquip.com/martini to get your first refill pack free with a new Quip electric toothbrush. That's getquip.com/martini. And tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.